to all our listeners, and welcome back to another episode of Relentless Pursuit, the Chance Mantillon Group's ongoing podcast series. Today is another entry in our mini-series in which we're attempting to define wealth management for our next-generation clients. In previous episodes, we've talked to a variety of subject matter experts in various areas of wealth management, and along the way, they have shared their own professional and personal experiences as to how they arrived at those areas of expertise. So as a departure today, we thought we would zero in on one of our own, Greg Merrill, who's a partner with the Chance Mantillon Group as a private wealth advisor, and get his insights and background and really his personal story as to how he came into his current role, and perhaps some insights he has to networking, both in the current environment and in his background. So, Greg, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks, Charlie. Appreciate you having me. I love what you guys are doing here, so I'm happy to help out anyway. So, yeah, we can start it with the background, and for all those that don't know me on the call. So, as Charlie mentioned, and he's Greg Merrill, I'm a partner and private wealth advisor here with the team. So I think my background kind of feeds into the topic of the day of networking. So I grew up in Michigan. After high school, moved to the Boston area for 2 years, played junior hockey, ended up going to college in New Hampshire, where I ended up having an internship, and then moving down to Stamford, Connecticut, post-college, where I kind of started my career professionally and will be for the foreseeable future.
When you joined UBS, you know, you weren't always with our team. What was your initial role at the firm?
Yeah, absolutely. So I was lucky enough to get the internship my senior year in Concord, New Hampshire, just with a small local office up there. So I get to kind of learn the lay of the land a little bit of the wealth management industry then. And then I was fortunate enough post-graduation to get into kind of a two-year program that the firm was offering at the time, where I was a financial planning specialist for an entire complex. So a group of advisors based off of geography, which was the New York Private Wealth Management Complex.
So, I mean, Greg, not to say that you were a fish out of water, but for some of our younger listeners, what is that process of developing a resume and kind of jumping in to the fold there?
Yeah, absolutely. Great question. And I talked to a lot of current students. I went to St. Anselm College, a lot of current students there about that. But if you ask my career services department, they probably got quite tired of me going in on a weekly, multi times a week basis. But you can never start too soon. And I know for me, one of the most frustrating things when I was in college, even going into the summer after my sophomore year and junior year, applying for internships and people saying, well, you don't have enough experience. In my head, I was like, well, how am I supposed to have experience? I'm asking for an internship to get experience. So that was a frustrating aspect of it. And that's to be honest, the kind of segue into the topic of today. I mean, that's kind of when I realized how important networking was. I didn't even know what the term networking meant at that time.
At the time for you, it was just going to the career services offices as frequently as you could and asking them for an opportunity.
Absolutely. And trying to just build out the resume, and just that was my starting point. And then they kind of have the advice of start reaching out to people you know and kind of alumni. And I can go into details of what I've learned in that process. And I think the best question I get asked in any aspect is, what do you wish you did differently? So I've definitely had a lot of time to reflect on that over the multiple conversations I've had on the topic.
Well, you just threw it out there. What do you wish you had done differently?
I think pre-college or even now as being in the business now for 6 years, I think it's tough to think about it, but people are willing to help more than you think. So for me, for instance, I grew up in Michigan playing youth hockey, and it's a tight community there. And so then you think about kids you played with and their parents and your family, friends, or alumni from your college or high school, people, they realize they've been successful and want to pay it forward. And so now that I'm 6 years out, that's why I have all these conversations trying to pay it forward. I wish there was someone to try to fill the void of things I wish there was there. I was fortunate enough to have some phenomenal mentors at a young age, but reaching out to a family friend and when we get into kind of tips and tricks in a little bit, this kind of the way that you reach out to those individuals is the most important aspect of it. But I think that the biggest takeaway is, I should have realized sooner, is that people are willing to help if you approach it correctly. And I think you're always in it. You got to have the mindset you're kind of always in an interview, because that's another thing we'll get into in tips and tricks, but you never know who you're going to meet or sit next to or talk to or hold the door for, or vice, et cetera, et cetera.
So, yeah, I mean, I think those tips and tricks are what our listeners are looking for as they venture out to college, the first job and beyond. And you kind of have already hit upon it, but you've talked about leveraging the network that you came from, but how do you develop that new network? Sitting down and talking to a stranger, what has that been like in your experience?
Totally. And so I think when I was first coming into being a private wealth advisor, it's a lot of what's your natural network. And for me, I didn't necessarily have one. So I grew up in Michigan, 2 years in Boston area, 4 years in New Hampshire, and then starting my career in Connecticut. So a lot of people would view that as a negative or a more difficult starting place. But for me, I kind of viewed it as a positive, because I had the starting points in all of those locations. And so it was more so that determining, and with the help of our senior partners, Tom and Andrew, with the help of how do you position things to go out to people? In reality, you have one chance of doing this correctly. So if you come at them in a salesy or asking too much type perspective, they're just going to shut you down. But if you come at it as viewing people as a thought leader in their space and coming from a place of admiration, per se, and wanting advice, people are really receptive to that. So I think that was the biggest thing. And so back to your question of how to start one from scratch, I mean, this takes one person, and they can help set that framework, and then you can kind of just snowball from there. If you ask them, is there anyone else that you view as a thought leader that might be helpful for me to talk to, and kind of go from there and to there and to there and vice versa. And then just in your natural day-to-day life. So you take the train to Manhattan, you don't know who you're sitting next to. And the big thing is just be humble, be genuine, be trustworthy, just hold the door for someone if they walk by and say good morning when you make eye contact. I know that's not very welcomed all the time in New York area, but that's you'll stand out with that.
Yeah, and I think really not just in our industry, but that certainly would apply to kind of any pursuit in any industry in terms of building a network as you're starting out. So we talked about kind of like the grassroots of how to build a network. But let's talk about once you take that leap and have now developed it, what are the next steps here in 2020 in terms of social media or formalizing those networks or bringing those networks together? What have you had success with?
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, no matter what time period or what level of the relationship it is or anything, take it to the next level. It's just, how do you build trust the quickest? It's difficult to do in a virtual world to build trust, but it's something that we've been trying to really work on. And for me, any conversation, I never try to act like I'm an expert on something I'm not. So admitting that you don't know something and you'll get them an answer if they ask you a question goes a lot further than trying to make up an answer and you're wrong. And so people appreciate that honesty, and people are passionate about certain things. So a lot of people are passionate about sports, for instance. So if I'm starting to get to know someone, whether virtually or in person, and they mention that they're watching the Yankees play, and then for me to be able to say, oh yeah, I saw the hit, or I saw that play, or yeah, they're playing really well, and kind of build a rapport off of sports, that helps break down those barriers and start developing trust on a non-business or agendaed conversation, which that goes anytime, pre-COVID or post-COVID. So trying to connect on a personal level, staying humble, staying genuine, no matter the platform, is the ultimate key.
Greg, you seem to make it seem like this is just all natural and it doesn't take effort, but I think that you would concur with my point of view that networking actually takes effort and a tremendous amount of time and sweat equity. Would you agree with that in terms of following up on these relationships and building out connections?
100%. I mean, if it was as easy as I was making it sound, I probably wouldn't be here talking to you guys. But that's just opening the door. I mean, that's starting the foundation. Some of these relationships will take years to develop. Think about a family friend that you grew up with. I mean, that's a relationship that's deep for years. And so this is just the start of that. And so trying to think of unique ways to stay in touch with people is also important. So from our team's perspective and the firm, there's a lot. The firm puts on an event. I know there was an event on the election coming up. So if I meet someone at the train and I thought that this topic would be a cool follow-up or that they'd be interested in, I'll send that to them, and just in a way to kind of maintain and touch points. And again, it's still not talking business at all. It's just sharing topics that are of interest to both parties. And so trying to nurture that. If I know someone likes wine and I see an interesting article, I'll share that with them. Or the topic could be anything. But trying to maintain, again, that common ground, and I think that goes a long ways.
So, Greg, you are the president and founder of the Southeast Michigan Exit Planning Institute. And I imagine that took a tremendous amount of coordination and networking to develop. Can you talk a little bit about how you had that concept in mind and then put all of these best practices that you've utilized over the years to build that chapter into what it is today?
That's a great question, and it makes me sound way more important than I am with that title. So there's definitely a lot of sweat equity in that, but I think, as you've heard Andrew say, probably, Charlie, so our senior partner Andrew Shantz always says, try to be comfortable with being uncomfortable. So if you just stay in your comfort zone all the time, it's tough to make things happen. And so I had to reach out. I never worked professionally in Michigan before. There's just everyone, when I left at 18 from Michigan, everyone viewed me as hockey player Greg. So changing that persona and mindset took a lot of time. So again, going back, connecting on mutual interest and talking hockey. If I was back in town, like, hey, let's catch up, blah, blah, blah. And then, oh, by the way, what are you doing now? And so on and so forth. So that took a lot of time, and I needed a long runway for that. But I think it goes back to my initial comment of people are willing to help. More people are willing to help than you think. And so going back to people you viewed as a mentor, and because I was fortunate enough, I didn't have any bad reps or reputations back in Michigan. So it was people were, because of my relationships growing up, people were like, yeah, of course I'll talk to you. And so thing is don't burn any bridges in anything. So simple as if I'm out walking the dog and I meet someone, and I'm not very nice to them or friendly to them, you never know if that person could be, I run across them at some point. So treat everyone as you'd like to be treated. I know that sounds cheesy, but that's what it really goes to at the end of the day. And so staying active, staying consistent, you just have to be genuine and be trustworthy. That's the gist of it. But yeah, that took a lot of effort, a lot of coordination, a lot of different people. But it, at the end of the day, it provided a platform to actually meet more people and to bring people together for a common purpose. So try to find the common purpose that everyone's interested in and create something around that. And you'd be surprised how willing people are to participate.
Again, all great points that I think are applicable to a variety of industries, if not all. And it seems like, to sum your words up, Greg, you know, it's people are willing to help, but also it takes effort on your part to go out there and seek that help. And I think that could be impactful for a lot of our listeners. What has been, you know, we're recording this now in the summer of 2020, and we're all working in remote environments or semi-remote environments. What have been some of the struggles that you've experienced keeping the momentum of your networking going through these times?
Another great question. Yeah, I think there's less of the natural stuff. So I'm not really holding the door open for very many people or sitting next to people on the train or walking by someone. So that's tough. And I think it's tough to build trust virtually from someone that you've met virtually, and that's challenging. But again, the people that you do meet, just stay genuine. Find that commonality, and it's a good time as well to reach back out to people that you did meet before and kind of stay active. As you said, there's a lot of sweat equity into maintaining relationships over a long period of time. So rekindling old relationships, touching base with people, that's really helpful. That's been the biggest thing. And making an effort to do that. Any relationship is an effort on both ends. So I think you'll also see people that you might not want to keep talking to. It's a two-sided relationship. So I think it helps you kind of determine who you actually want to maintain relationships with during the time. But it's a great question. Again, I don't think something that we've been taught from the beginning is no one's cornered the market on good ideas. So trying to stay creative, stay ahead of the game, be comfortable being uncomfortable. So put yourself out there, I think is the big thing.
Well, certainly Greg is out there. So if any of our listeners would like to connect with him, we could certainly arrange that for a quick conversation and talk about his successes in networking at various stages, whether it be in school, right out of school, or when you take that big leap and are off and running as he is today. Thank you again.
Charlie. The listeners that are in college still, and I've been super impressed with the way I've talked to a lot of seniors are supposed to graduate May of 2020. So this all happened their second semester. And then that obviously threw a wrench in their plans. And it's tough for companies to kind of onboard during a COVID environment. But try to stay positive. There's things you can control and there's things you can't control. And the things you can control that'll help you in the long run are having a smile when you meet someone, if you have the opportunity to meet someone, be genuine whenever you talk to someone, hold doors for people, control those things and try to keep a positive attitude and use LinkedIn, use your career services. People are willing to help. So whether it's a virtual phone call, everyone's around now, reach out to people, have conversations with them to learn more about the fields you're interested in. It's a great time to do that. So I'll end with that from that regard. It's kind of a takeaway for our listeners still in college.
Well, Greg, thanks for your time again today. And for our listeners still in college, could not agree with Greg more. And again, the whole team and Greg as well are here. Should you just need that second opinion or advice on that? And we look forward to you joining us on a future entries into our series about defining wealth for the next generation. And if anyone, we encourage you to go ahead and check out all the archives at our website, ubs.com/team/Chance Mantione Group for this and all of our prior entries, not only to this series, but the Relentless Pursuit podcast series. With that said, hope everyone has a great afternoon.